I think I speak for everyone when I say, please don't take either of those players off either of those teams. We are so close to getting this back, and I want to see them both in the finals. It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line.
And I'm not a fan of that method at all. Take them off the team and what are they? I mean, you take any great player off the team and they're going to be a way lesser team. So they're the eighth seed or they're out of the playoffs in the ninth seed. So what? I mean, I do not like judging by that metric at all.
What is your metric for him?
My metric is who I think is the best player. That's what I look at. And I think Giannis is going to win it this year. I think the way he played up to the break, I think he's going to win it over LeBron. That's mine. I mean, and because that's what a lot of people do. What's your definition of MVP, most valuable player?
Well, that goes all the way back to like the Peyton Manning model of it. Yes. When he missed a season with a neck injury, and you saw the Colts bottom out so badly, they were able to get Andrew Luck with the number one overall pick, and we all clearly saw, wow, if you take this guy away, he is so important to the team. Is that not a definition of value?
Here's also something that you have to take into consideration with that. Bill Polian, who was the GM of that team, basically said, we didn't give, 2 cents about the backup quarterback because we knew if we lost Peyton Manning, we were done. I mean, they didn't even try to have a competent quarterback.
But I guess that's the example of value. It's like, this guy's so good, but planning for something else in his place is a fool's errand because no one's going to be able to fill into that level.
But that's their thought process. If they did have a competent backup, maybe they would have won more games. Maybe they wouldn't have been as bad as they looked. That was their the GM's thought process, that if we lose him, we're not getting anywhere, but it doesn't mean they would have been that bad if they had a competent backup.
Who was the backup quarterback that
year? It was a Painter, I think.
Curtis Painter?
Curtis Painter.
Which, I mean, you could construct as like a league average backup in that situation.
Bill Polian basically said, we didn't care about our backup quarterback.
Which I think is a more of a modern trend, is investing time and effort into your backup quarterback spot. We say all this because the announcement was made yesterday relative to the NBA awards that you are going to have to base your voting off everything that had happened before the shutdown of league play in March, that none of the games ramping up to the postseason were going to count towards that award, which, as we know, has some effect because we had discussed in this. Giannis was the overwhelming favorite for a majority of the year, but LeBron James had a late push that was starting before everything shut down that led some of us to believe, if he could continue that, maybe even in these ramp-up games, could you at least make it close in all of this one right now? So LeBron James spoke at a press conference yesterday and gave his thoughts on the final MVP votes basically already being tallied right now.
No, I'm not disappointed because, things happen and control what you can control, and I can't control that. But as far as the MVP race, I think I, show what I'm capable of doing, not only individually, but from a team's perspective. Us being number one in the West, there was a lot of conversation about LeBron can do those things in the East, but if he ever came to the West, what can he do? I heard all of that, and to be able to have our team at the top of the Western Conference and playing the way that we were playing at that time and the way I was playing, that's definitely a good feeling.
Listen, there's no doubt how great LeBron is and what he was doing. It's incredible. At 35 years old, what he's accomplishing there with the Lakers, and the thought he would have had 8 more games in the bubble. Now, who knows if he'd have played all 8 games, quite honestly.
Yeah, what his minutes would have looked like.
Yeah, they it would take a lot for them to lose the number one seed spot. So I understand what they're doing. I just think Giannis had another one of those years. Yeah, the Lakers were great out in the West, but Milwaukee is the best record in the NBA, and that is because of Giannis. And I think he wins the second MVP. Quite honestly, I think he wins Defensive Player of the Year as well.
Yeah, that was the other thing we heard echoed from Brian Windhorst and some others, and that's the kind of transcendent season. And like, I guess that's the difficult part of this, because wins are a little more tied to your stars in the NBA just because of how much of an effect they can have on the team in a lot of this one. But we do have to account for some of the differences in that. The NBA has got so many great advanced stats that when you look at player efficiency rating and things like that, Giannis is flirting with like one of the best seasons we've ever seen in that one. The ones that are supposed to be able to account for history, era, pace, all of these things that come up in these situations that sort of make arguments like, well, just pluck him off the team, a little less relevant in this because we've got something to grade on that scale.
Yeah, I mean, what he did, again, 25 years old, averaging almost 30 points a game, almost 55% shooting, 30% from threes, almost 14 rebounds, just about 6 assists. I mean, he had a monster year, and obviously they had the best record in the NBA. The Lakers, though, did go 8-2 with wins over the Celtics, the Clippers, and the Bucks. who are led obviously by Giannis. So, I mean, I get the thought process, but I think Giannis is going to win it. I think he should win it. Just like that rookie of the year, we thought, will Zion have that chance in the bubble to catch Ja Morant? Well, Zion's not even now in the bubble. And again, we hope all is well with the family emergency. He had to leave the bubble before. Ja Morant is going to win that, I think, unanimously for that. So I think we look at all the awards. Would it be, do you think any differently that Giannis is the MVP? Ja Morant is the rookie of the year. Nick Nurse, probably the coach of the year. You know,
I think that one should probably be a slam dunk considering everything they've absorbed in the last couple of years. But I want to stick with the MVP conversation for a second because Brian Windhorst, who we're going to have on a little bit, we heard in the open, said this thing is signed, sealed, and delivered at this point. Don't bother wasting your time on LeBron. Our own Kendrick Perkins, ESPN NBA analyst, said yesterday he thinks that talk is a little premature.
LeBron, right before the pandemic, he was on Giannis' heels like a pair of socks. So I don't understand how it's just a landslide to me. And where's this same energy when LeBron was in the Eastern Conference and we was talking about it was a weak Eastern Conference? Here it is now. The Lakers haven't made the playoffs since 2013. That was 7 years ago. And now they're in the playoffs at the number one spot with LeBron James finally in his career is averaging a 20-10 season, 25 points, almost 11 assists and 8 rebounds. And by the way, I don't just feel that way. Some of his co-workers who he play against feel that way. Dame Dollar said it during the pandemic. What LeBron doing right now is very, very special, despite being 35 in year 17.
Listen, and I agree with everything he said. What he's doing at 35 years old, how he prepares himself every year, because there was the uh-oh moment of missing all that time last year with the groin. He's older. How is he going to come back for that? And he has been nothing short of spectacular.
But I'm curious, so the other part of this is why there hasn't been any of the conference slander associated with Giannis in this, especially because he hasn't climbed the mountaintop yet.
Because I think we got to the point with LeBron of Michael Jordan that he could be considered the MVP and they're not going to get it because you've won them already. So I do think there is that element to it.
But I guess I'm saying the Eastern Conference backdrop, because that was part of the narrative for LeBron forever was, well, of course he was in the finals every year because who else was he playing against in the Eastern Conference with a lot of this? Who else was going on this? I mean, the faces have not changed all that much. The Toronto Raptors were the team that were running into the LeBron James ceiling for years with, again, now that Kawhi Leonard left, largely the same group that they've got now besides DeMar DeRozan, who departed and went to the Spurs.
Yeah, and Kevin Durant hasn't even started playing in the East yet, and Kyrie Irving was injured for a lot of time in the East. So you're right, there aren't those big-name players in the East.
Well, and it's not even to say they're bad teams, but like the Boston Celtics, when LeBron was going through the East, had that big three that won a championship and were quality there for a stretch in a lot of this one. They had those Chicago Bulls teams when Derrick Rose was still healthy and that core was intact. This is not to knock a Miami Heat team that blew out a lot of our expectations this year with Jimmy Butler, the Pacers, who with a healthy Victor Oladipo look a lot different, and a Sixers team that sits at the sixth seed now that everyone thinks is
make
dangerous.
A move. Yeah.
But a lot of that context didn't matter when we were talking about LeBron with this with people. And so I'm just curious if it's a, you know, Giannis likability thing, as if we don't see him still yet as having been near the top long enough for us to start to question, well, why haven't you done anything?
Yeah. Oh, I think there's something definitely to that. I think he's this bright young player who's already been in MVPs, who maybe is on the precipice of leading his team to a title. I think he's still climbing that mountain. He's up there as a player, but as can you take your team, like LeBron took the Cavaliers all the way to the mountaintop after he did it in Miami, but he took a Cav team, kind of drag them along, and he went. He's taken teams to the mountaintop there. So, yeah, I do think there is something about that. Look at what the hell we did with Golden State. Wow, wow, wow. And then, okay, someone beat them. Someone enough. You know, let's knock them off the mountaintop. You get tired of it, and Giannis is still climbing that from a team aspect.
And I guess that's what I hope, because what it feels like is we don't expect as much of Giannis as we did LeBron. And maybe that's right, because the expectations we lumped on LeBron were insane starting from an early age, yet somehow he's managed to meet most of them.
Yeah, nobody's talking about Giannis as maybe the greatest player of all time. That's left for LeBron, you know, in that battle with he and Michael Jordan. That's LeBron's battle. That trying to accumulate more rings and try and battle Michael Jordan for the greatest player of all time.
LeBron's the oldest player in history at 35 years old to lead the league in assists for the first time in his career, according to the Elias Sports Bureau. That stat's incredible. It's brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. Coming up next, a bright future for one of the teams in the NBA bubble, and the Blue Jays won't be in a big league park for their big league club. Mike Golic Jr. Here. But thankfully, sports are, it seems like, coming back to save
really
us
does.
Here. Slowly but surely. The NBA, again, announced yesterday no positive tests. They test 346 players inside the bubble, had zero positive tests coming back, which is good news because they start inter-squad scrimmages July 22nd through the 28th. Each team will get three inter-squad scrimmages. And then July 30th, games resume play. And so around here, we thought, all right, you know what? It had been a while. We talked so much about everything off the court for these teams, and understandably so, that we don't have a great recollection of what's going on the court with everybody from back before everything shut down. And so we thought we'd get you caught up on here with a little thing we're going to call our status updates around here. We're going to do one of these. We're going to do three of these during the show today, do a few a day leading back up to the resumption of play. So you just get an idea of what each team was coming from, who's healthy, where's their roster at, what's at stake going forward.
We call this a refresher.
Exactly.
Everybody, we just kind of get you caught back up on the teams involved.
Think about it as the cliff notes for your NBA resumption of play on this
big,
one.
Big fan of the Cliff Notes.
This show all too familiar with those. So let's get it started with the first team as we look at the NBA bubble on the Western Conference outside looking in of the playoff scenario, the Phoenix Suns.
Golic and Wingo NBA status update. Phoenix Suns.
It's Kellen Olson with Arizona Sports with the latest on the Phoenix Suns. The Suns left off the season 26-39, dealing with the inconsistencies of a young team and a first-year head coach in Monty Williams. The 25-game suspension for DeAndre Ayton certainly didn't help, but they found a way to play in a style that worked under Williams and new point guard Ricky Rubio. They led the league and lead a league right now in assists per game. Speaking of Rubio, though, his availability is unknown. Williams has declined to comment multiple times on who is and isn't in Orlando with the team, practicing, of course, with media not being there yet. We haven't been able to see who is and isn't there for the Suns, most notable players being Rubio and Aaron Baines, who we haven't seen there yet. As far as expectations for this team in Orlando, it's about what Devin Booker can do with meaningful games. These are the most meaningful games he is going to play in his career thus far. The Suns are a long shot to make it in the playoffs, of course, but Booker is one of the best young players in the league, and Suns fans are looking for him to represent the franchise well in Orlando.
So listen, they don't have a shot down there, okay? Let's just be honest. Again, how it works is the ninth seed, if they're within four games of the eighth seed, they have a play in the 8 and 9 for that eighth seed. Right now, Memphis sits at the eighth seed, and the Suns are basically six games behind them, with San Antonio, Sacramento, New Orleans, and Portland all ahead of them. So they don't have a great shot here. So really, this is more about, what do we see in the future? You have a star in Booker. Where in the future is this team going to go? DeAndre Ayton has really taken a jump defensively for this team. So hopefully you're liking the future here of the young building blocks they have here.
Yeah, and I think that's what you've seen. Our researcher Vic sent along some great notes.
Yeah.
Like when their core has been on the court together, that lineup of Rubio, Booker, Kelly Oubre, Bridges, and DeAndre Ayton, they've outscored opponents by 20.2 points per 100 possessions. That's third in the NBA among 91 lineups to log at least 100 minutes. The problem is, because of that DeAndre Ayton suspension that we mentioned, along with some injuries in that, they've only been able to use that lineup in 21 of 65 games. So it's a smaller sample size, but one they're hoping to grow on in there. So that's the issue there. Ricky Rubio's a huge one,
yeah,
too.
They're
just over 10 points per 100 possessions better when he's on the court for them as opposed to off. There's not a lot of depth behind him. And so if you're keeping an eye on that, if you're a Suns fan that's going in with any hope in this situation, that might dash some of it if Ricky Rubio's not on the court.
So you're looking at building blocks for the future, where you're getting better, where you're seeing the improvement, what kind of depth can they add, what more stars can they possibly add, because that's what we see in this league now. If you're going to be near the top, you got to have that two or three, one major star and a couple of other stars on that team as well. So that's where this team is looking to go. Again, I think they're just playing the string out here of the eight games down in Orlando, and then they'll be going home.
Yep, but as we heard from a lot of these teams getting those practices in with a young team. That's why that talk of the second bubble, which we haven't revisited that.
Are they doing the second bubble
in Chicago still?
The eight teams that didn't make it, we're talking about.
The Delete Eight.
The Delete Eight, which is a phenomenal name. We're talking about having a tournament, I believe, in a bubble type atmosphere in Chicago, but we haven't heard a lot about that. That might be a lot of talk early, and then like, yeah, no, man, we're good.
They're like, what are we doing? This is a terrible idea. But a young team like the Suns gets a bunch of extra cracks at it to lead this off. The inter-squad scrimmages, the eight games that go along with it for the Devin Bookers of the world, DeAndre Ayton, as you try and build something resembling a young core around there. Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio. We've also got, I think, a little uncertainty that we're still trying to work through on the side of Major League Baseball on this one. We talked about yesterday, the Toronto Blue Jays still looking for a home. Canada announced that the Blue Jays would not be allowed to play their home games in Toronto because of the fears of the coronavirus traveling north of the border. Here's our own Jeff Passan, ESPN MLB insider, on the Blue Jays ballpark options going forward.
They're still trying to figure that out. And what they seem to have landed on is that they want to be in a major league park. They could have gone to Salem Field in Buffalo, their AAA affiliate. They could have gone down to Dunedin, Florida, where they have their spring training facility. But both the players and the team executives seem to be focused on that big league ballpark. And Pittsburgh makes a whole lot of sense, especially if Baltimore or Washington, for example, are not going to be involved with that. It allows them to stay on the East Coast. There's not much conflict with the Pirates when it comes to shared home games. The schedules match up pretty well. And if Toronto ends up in Pittsburgh, it will be a happy ending for them.
Listen, I can see them wanting to be in a big league stadium. We're at the point, though, where a lot of people aren't getting what they want. So, but if you have that choice, I mean, a AAA going down to Florida for your spring training, which I think nobody wants to do, or playing in a big league stadium, be it somebody else's stadium, I think you would probably choose to do that. I'm sure Buffalo would love them to play there and make that their home for the 60 game schedule. But, you know, they're running out of time here. Decision has to be made. They have three games, I believe, to start out on the road against Tampa Bay, and then they play two in Washington before they host Washington for two games. So they have five games on the road before they have to host, and now it's just a matter where they're going to have to host. And it does seem like it is kind of steering toward Pittsburgh here.
It is, and this is what we said with a lot of leagues resuming play is – the biggest example of leagues doing well with this back is, I think, less the plans. We expect them, with the benefit of time, a lot of them, to come up with a coherent plan. It's your ability to plug the holes in the dam as they pop up. This is one of the bigger ones we've seen. We saw complaints going into the NBA bubble, the WNBA bubble down in Florida as well. Some of the disagreements with the way that things were presented early on. But this is, all right, this team now is without a home in this one. This is an entire uprooting here. But the one thing, man, you heard over and over again from those players was, mate, big league ballpark, big league ballpark. They really stretch that. And I think a lot of that is, yes, you know, they were, you know, they have familiarity with their spring training facility. Yes, a lot of these players have probably come up through the single A double parks, triple A bubble ballparks as they go through all this. And you don't want to go back to those spots. Like, even amidst all this, having things you're accustomed to once you get to that level, having the certain trappings around your training facility on the inside of things, what you're dealing with the medical staff and the facilities that you have available to there, are all things that once you jump up to a certain level,
you're
less willing to concede on going backwards, especially in a time where so much else is up in the
air.
Man,
think about the work, though, for the crew in Pittsburgh of cleaning and disinfecting that clubhouse. You know, normally for one team in there, now two teams. So way more games will be played in that stadium. There's a lot of work for the ancillary people in this. And then all the players for Toronto basically are going to be making Pittsburgh their home, because home's not going to be in Toronto, because as we know, they can't go back and forth. So making their home somewhere there. And remember, they're not in a bubble. So it's not like they're going to all be sequestered in a hotel and have to stay there. They're going to go out and be in the community, live in the community, just like all the other teams are. But man, the work for that staff there in taking care of that stadium for all those all those games that'll be played there now is going to be massive.
Yeah, it becomes a really difficult part of it, all of that infrastructure around it. You think about how much every time we got ready to go on the road somewhere as a team, whether it was at Notre Dame or the NFL, you had people from your crew that were going out there to scout things weeks in advance to make sure, all right, we know exactly what hotel we want, what we're going to get provided for people as far as meals, the things we get set up there with the training room and everything. That's even just in the hotel before you get to game day on certain things like that. We've seen that play out when we did the international trip at Notre Dame. You're talking about now having to do this on day's notice. Yep. Now, I'm sure they've had some understanding this could be possible.
Right.
But now all of a sudden they have to make this decision, go into that city, and then figure out where our players are going to live, where we're going to get all the things that we need on a day-to-day basis as far as taking care of them. That is a tough task for the support staff that exists around all these teams.
You know, a lot of people questioning why did it take Canada so long to make the decision. I actually understand that. I mean, you kind of want to wait till the last possible moment because you'd like it to be there, but then you just come to the decision that it can't happen. But that does, you know, expedite you having to make decisions going somewhere else. It's, you know, it's not even easy to say, okay, we choose Pittsburgh. They're going to help make it work. But just for all the ancillary things you talked about that now say, okay, we picked the city. Now all the things that go into it. By the way, it's a beautiful area down there where the ballparks are. It's really, really nice.
Still want to throw in, I know Jason Fitz did this on First Take Your Take yesterday, but the Hartford Yard Goats would happily welcome you into this one.
Best AA ballpark 2 years running, right?
And I like to thank our parents, again, the AA affiliate for the Colorado Rockies are the Hartford Yard Goats. I like to think that Papa Rocky would understand we got to help out a friend in this situation.
But to your point, the guys, I think they want the big league stadium.
It's a hell of a ballpark.
Yes, it is.
It's a hell of a ballpark. I was going to say the chicken and munchkin skewer there is an absolute delight. So plenty more on that as the Blue Jays search for a home. But coming up next, should an Iowa coaching legend still be getting the benefit of the doubt after everything that we have learned? We will ask our next guest that after SportsCenter.
All right, the NFL made an offer to the Players Association to play no preseason games this summer. A source told our Adam Schefter the league's proposal to the players includes an offer for a longer training camp acclimation period, which is closer to what the union initially proposed. The NFLPA has not yet informed the league whether it will accept the proposal. I bet they do. Lakers star LeBron James said Monday he's okay with the league informing voters for its season awards to only consider games played up through March 11th. So these eight games in the bubble do not count. Should LeBron take home the MVP award, it would be his fifth time doing so and first since the 2012-2013 season. The 35-year-old averaged just under 26 points, a career high, 10.6 assists in 60 games prior to March 11th. And as we just talked about, the Toronto Blue Jays are looking for a home. They are not allowed to play in Canada, and they are talking to some teams, but the Pirates, it seems to be the one that may be able to work out. A Pirates president, Travis Williams, confirmed the talks and sounded ready to welcome the Blue Jays despite describing it as a monumental challenge. On this date, July 21st, 2004, I do remember this, in one of the most notable instances of Manny being Manny, Manny Ramirez cuts off a relay throw from Johnny Damon, allowing a two-run inside-the-park home run at Fenway Park.
SportsCenter is brought to you by Blue Emu. Maximum pain relief works fast and you won't stink. It's pharmacist-recommended odor-free pain relief for muscle pain, backaches, strains, sprains, or even arthritis. And there's no stinging or burning involved. It's simple pain relief. Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief works fast and you won't stink. Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., in this morning. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And let's head there now for our next guest. You can hear him, The Right Time Podcast with Bomani Jones. You can also see him on Highly Questionable and among a number of other ESPN platforms. Bomani, good morning. How you doing?
Good, man. How about you?
Good, good.
We're good. No complaints here, Bo. So I, for those who don't know and are not as used to this, Bomani Jones around the sport of college football is as knowledgeable and well-versed as anyone you're going to come across in here, even though inexplicably we don't use him as much in this capacity at ESPN. But Bomani, I wanted to ask you, yesterday we got news out of Iowa, a document uncovered that a diversity task force in Iowa with a number of staffers around that athletic department, had put together a document and presented it to Iowa in early 2019, and specifically the football team, documenting and outlining a lot of the same instances and accusations of the culture around there that made it difficult for black people to feel comfortable, and instances that just seem, you know, out and out racist in a lot of senses. And so I guess I would ask, how did all of us miss this so badly the first time around when we went through this about a month ago with the press conference after the very public statements from former and current players on social media?
Well, I think we missed it the first time because we're so inclined to give people like Kirk Ferentz the benefit of the doubt that all he really had to do was sit in there in that first press conference and be like, "Ooh, wow, my bad. I didn't know." We're like, okay, well, Kirk didn't know. And then we come to find out we got paperwork that Kirk did, in fact, know what was going on and apparently seemed to believe that just by letting dudes wear earrings and hoodies that everything would be fixed. Like, that was what he thought. He was like, man, you know, we decided to let them wear the earrings, so I thought that everything there was okay. And it clearly was not. And it really bothered me when I saw that there had been a report previously, because Ferentz basically got up at that press conference and lied to everybody when he had it a couple months ago, because he acted so shocked that all these players would have these feelings and then share them, when in reality, he knew that they had these feelings. In fact, he would have been better served if he had gotten up at that press conference a couple months ago and said, yes, we knew that the players felt this way. We looked into this and we started doing some things, but we got some more steps to take. Instead, he just acted like, whoa, really? This is what's going on? And it happened, and it slid in part because media, by and large, doesn't want to dig into these things. You got to send a shout-out to the guys at Hawkeye Nation, because they put in the Freedom of Information Act request to find all of this stuff out. But otherwise, major media would just let this slide.
And he admitted, Kirk Ferentz, that he dropped the ball on not having a follow-up meeting with his players, which really – and Bomani, for me, it has been a learning experience over the years because of my age, going from, hey, you keep a lot of stuff in-house, you take care of your problems, to seeing everything on social media that players are able to bring out now, and how things can just be swept under the rug and kept under the rug if it isn't brought out by the players. And I've really – seen that come to light, at least over the last couple of years, and players having the power now in college to do what they're doing. Where do you think this leads for Kirk Ferentz? Can what he's saying now be enough of, okay, everything's going to be okay there now?
Yeah, he'll be fine as long as they like win a halfway decent number of games this year. One thing I think we've all learned about when people get fired, the number one reason that you get fired is because your boss wants to fire you. It doesn't really have that much to do with actual performance or actual malfeasance. Do they want to fire you? And they, for whatever reason, do not want to fire him at Iowa. They have an affection for Ferentz that I find to be a little bit bizarre, because his predecessor, Hayden Fry, that was like a legitimately great coach and, from what I've read, great man. You know, like this, like he was the what we want to make college football coaches. Hayden Fry seemed to fit in line with that. Ferentz, not so much. Now, granted, Ferentz had that run in his first decade on that job where I want to say he had something like 3 top 10 seasons, which Iowa hadn't seen success in that way, and so you get addicted to it, and so you kind of keep riding it out. But I think you made an interesting point about believing that you handle these things in-house, because apparently at most of these schools, that's what the guys have tried to do first, is to handle things in-house, and that just doesn't seem to work. Like, shame seems to be the only thing that gets anything moving. Like, we're having Oklahoma State where Chuba Hubbard sent those tweets, and then they put out that weird video, and then Hubbard apologized for not coming to Gundy as a man. If he had come to Gundy and not come to the world, wouldn't nothing happen? It just wouldn't.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Completely agree on that. Talking to Bomani Jones, host of the Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast that you can get wherever you get your podcast. Bomani, big picture, and you and I exchanged a couple of tweets on this yesterday. Has everything we've seen in the last couple months, especially around players using their voices on social media, have we maybe overstated how much power that gives players now? I mean, where are they at still with their ability to affect change with that as a tool now?
Oh, yeah, we've totally overstated it, because when you think about it, everything that we've seen players use their quote-unquote power to get is like for dignity. It's like for basic stuff. Like something, a point I always make about the civil rights movement is that as momentous and important as it was, when you really go back and look at what people were fighting for, it was stuff they were already supposed to get. Like, power gets things that's a little bit beyond what they quote-unquote deserve. Everybody deserves basic dignity. Everybody deserves to be treated right by their coaches and the people who are around them. And that is what the players are fighting for at every turn here, is really the basic concept of dignity. And so I think for us as observers, if we start talking about, hey, the players got this power to make this happen and now they're using it, well, number one, it kind of gives the implication that when they're treated badly, they could change it, but they don't. So it's almost like kind of sort of what they want. Like, we wind up in that place. And I also think that number two, when we talk about them having that power, it makes us feel better about the fact that we know that fundamentally a lot of what goes on around this game is just wrong. Like, we know a lot of what goes on around college sports just doesn't pass the smell test. And so when the guys come up and do something to get something a little better, we're like, yeah, good for them. When the truth is, we should be the ones fighting for those things for them in reality. Like, as observers and as media, I think we have a certain level of responsibility to, like, oversee the fairness of what goes on. And what we have is just wildly unfair.
And I think as especially both of us here on the set, former players that were on the other side of that, where it's so normalized for so long, it is eye-opening to get that 30,000-foot view of things. Yep. And to see it with a little more information and perspective here now. Bamani, what are the other things that came up?
One point I want to make, by the way, about both of you, though, when you talk about that, and I think this is an important distinction. I was talking to a college football coach about this yesterday. You guys went to one of the schools that actually cares about whether their players learn things, you know, like yeah. Go to class, get degrees. But that's a big thing. Like, it's, you know, you want the guys to be treated fairly no matter what. But, like, it's one thing at a place where you feel pretty confident that the school is going to make sure that academically you get something out of the deal by the time you get out of there. These other places, like at Iowa, the black graduation rate was 40%, while the white graduation rate of those players was 80%.
Yeah, I mean, it's just gross. And in the Big Ten, I believe that was the largest disparity in the conference. There was a ton with that. And you're right, Bamani, especially when the sham that is amateurism is built on the promise of an education that most of these places don't even sniff delivering on. It makes the whole thing even a bit more of a farce than a lot of these other things that we have described in that. Bamani Jones with us here on Golic and Wingo. Bo, one other thing that I wanted to get you on while we had you here. Yesterday, saw a Twitter exchange back and forth between Mark Cuban and Ted Cruz surrounding a tweet about the anthem that was sent to Mark Cuban in this one. And it seems in general we're getting an uptick in politicians taking their shots at the world of sports with things like this. But this seemed like a pretty high-profile matchup here.
Yeah, it did. It's a high-profile matchup, but, like, this is a statement that I can offer absent of politics. Like, this is just from everything I've gathered, and I know enough people to feel confident saying this. Man, people do not like Ted Cruz, right? Like, it does not you are not a hero for engaging in a public battle with Ted Cruz, because even the people who are on Ted Cruz's same side, don't like Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is from Houston like me, and I'm not really rocking with Ted Cruz, not because of his politics, but just because of his Ted Cruz. And so when Cruz jumps into something like this, it's an easy fight to decide that you're going to go back and forth with him. And I think for Cuban, in a lot of ways, it was a bit of an easy fight to go back and forth with that talk show host who, you know, came on and said that if guys are kneeling, then so forth and so on and everything else. Like, all that stuff those guys are having back and forth is kind of a, like, yeah, that's cool, I get you. But it feels real diversionary in a lot of ways that we are going in these other directions. Like, I'm supposed to talk to Cuban about this and haven't gotten around to it. But for all this stuff that Cuban's saying now, this is also the dude who 6 years ago said that he would cross the street from a black kid in a hoodie the same way he would a white dude with tattoos. I'm like, damn, he got to get tattoos on his face and all I got to do is keep my ears warm? Like, that's the only thing? Like, I would like to hear more from Mark Cuban about his journey to getting to the place where he is right now on these issues than either one of them getting into a grandstanding fight on Twitter that ultimately won't do nothing.
And I think with Mark Cuban, in a lot of senses, I think that people would have a lot of questions about that in light of what's happened in Washington, right. The recent comparisons to what happened with the Mavericks franchise there as well. Download, subscribe to the Right Time podcast with Bamani Jones, wherever you get your podcast. Bo, we always appreciate the time, man.
No problem, man. You guys be good.
Thanks, Bo. I mean, real quick here, was a talk show host that said if told Mark Cuban, tweeted to him, if a player kneels, he's done with the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, talk show host basically said he was excited for the Mavericks ramp up, but if a player kneels for the anthem, he's out.
Done. And Mark Cuban tweeted to him, what did he say, see ya? Or
Mark Cuban just tweeted bye back at him and then retweeted, said the anthem policing has gone way
right.
too far.
And then Ted Cruz jumped in and brought it to, oh, now you're ripping people who want to stand for the anthem, flipped it completely around. And then Cuban jumped back on Ted Cruz and said, hey, why don't you talk to me? you know, I'm the one that tweeted, you know, that. And, yeah, that's where it got. And as Bomani said, it'll basically solve nothing.
Yeah, exactly. But it is interesting. Mark Cuban, as we talked about, and he was the one that offered advice to Dan Snyder about, yeah, hey, listen, you need to take responsibility for this stuff. As Bomani said, there have been a lot of things that Mark Cuban has seemingly changed his views on in a short span of years here. And is someone interesting to continue to explore, because those conversations you talk about creating change are the ones that actually help in that avenue. How did you get to this place that you claim to be in now? So great stuff there from Bomani. As always, check out the Right Time podcast. Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. Coming up next, a first pitch that will likely be a flat curve. We'll get to that after this. Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Get you caught up on a little bit of what is trending. The NBA and the National Basketball Players Association said Monday that coronavirus tests of 346 players at the league's bubble campus in Orlando since July 13th have yielded zero positives. When the league announced this initial batch of testing in the bubble on July 13th, it said two of 322 players had come back positive. Also on Monday, the NBA announced the rosters for all 22 teams participating in the season's resumptions at ESPN's Wide World of Sports Complex, part of the Walt Disney World Resort. So great news out of the bubble in Orlando. Meanwhile, outside of the bubble, the Jets and Giants are the latest NFL teams to announce that they won't have fans in the stands until further notice. There won't be any fans allowed at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey after Governor Phil Murphy ordered restricting public gatherings. The two New York teams put out a joint statement acknowledging that there will be no fans at their games until circumstances change. Other teams will be finding out if fans are allowed and how many as the season draws closer. Remember, we had heard from Mark Davis about the prospect of no fans at Las Vegas for their new stadium. So plenty more on that as we get updates. And how about this as an update? A hero finally getting his due. The Washington Nationals announced that Dr. Anthony Fauci is going to throw out the first pitch on Thursday before the Nats' opening season game against the Yankees. Dr. Fauci, for anyone that doesn't know, has been at the forefront of the pandemic and was delivering messages via briefings to the public regarding health and safety protocols for the country to follow. He's a physician and immunologist and has served as the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases since 1984 and is also a huge Nats fan and was described to us as the LeBron James of infectious disease.
This is awesome. We'll talk about it in a second. This brought to you, what's trending, brought to you by Redbox. Rent Scoob at Redbox tonight. Scooby-Doo, Shaggy, and Mystery Inc. discover that Scooby's secret legacy could be the key to stopping a global dog apocalypse. Wow. We don't want that to happen.
We got a global dog apocalypse happening in the basement right now.
Visit Redbox.com for all the ways to watch. Hank is down there as he normally is, our pug, but Jenny and Jake are in town, and they brought their dog Chip. It's an 80-pound chocolate lab roaming the set right now, waiting to unplug stuff as he's looking for bones.
He is soaking wet, has clearly been in the pool. This is wholly irresponsible by the rest of the family for letting him down here.
Oh, and here comes Harry.
It is pure chaos in this. They are all here, by the way, because my sister Sydney got engaged last night to her boyfriend Ben Broniker. There was a great proposal involved in that.
Yes, there was.
And as we've talked all morning about your proposal that we rehash over the course of this.
Horrific.
Much less than stellar. So we asked everyone at Golic and Wingo, we need your bad proposal stories. And you guys have delivered on this one. EC Lynch tweeted in, at our friend's lake house, he decided to hide the ring in food at dinner. That's a very Golic move right there.
Boy, that really is. What that'd be bad.
I rejected the potato that he put it in, so he threw it in a spoonful of green bean casserole. I had to lick it clean before we could put it on my finger. 24 years strong. Congrats to Sid and Ben.
Wow. That's impressive. That is very impressive.
Delicious. Matthew Christensen, my wife found out that I also had the ring, and she was excited to get it. At the same time, her sister called and was stranded on the wrong side of town, so she wouldn't let me go help until she got the ring. So I handed her the ring and left. Immediately after that moment, 18 years later, I did want to make it memorable. Mission accomplished.
Well, so I was going to say it worked out, even though mine was horrid, and I'll get into how bad it was. We've still made it some 33 years. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it's worked out okay.
You found a way to make it work on here. Golic and Wingo is brought to you by DraftKings, America's top-rated daily fantasy app. Keep those coming at Golic and Wingo. We want to get back to those all morning as we celebrate the only way we know how, by highlighting everyone's mistakes, because that's what this show does. But, right. Man, Dr. Fauci getting to toss out the first miss. I think he should also be people's sexiest man alive this year. That's my assumption.
Well, man of the year, sexiest man alive. There are a lot of awards he should be up for. I'm wondering what kind of pitch it's going to be. Because you know what? Doesn't matter how popular you are.
Oh, you don't think they'd boo him.
You bounce
it. But that's the thing. No one's there to boo.
There's
going to be no one there.
They got to have a soundtrack.
Do you think the in-stadium PA would be bold enough to, if he dirts this pitch, to have it boo Dr. Fauci?
Let me tell you what, he is so lucky there's no crowd, because I don't care how great you are, you dirt one, you get booed. I threw out three first pitches, and that's all I was ever told. Now, I'm nowhere near the statue of Dr. Fauci.
I was going to say, I appreciate you trying to equate you to, like, you both accomplished to a
similar. The only thing we'll have in common is we'll have both thrown out a first pitch. After that, we have nothing in common, but from what I've been told, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. You dirt it, and you will get booed. But you're right. He has no crowd, so he won't get booed.
I was going to say, so that should help the nerves in that moment a little bit out there.
No pressure, right?
If I know Dr. Fauci, like I think I know Dr. Fauci at this point, he's throwing from the mound on this.
I was going to say, you think he's throwing from the mound, not in front?
I think he's throwing it from the mound, I think this thing is right down the middle of home plate.
I'm going to be a little more realistic and don't think it's going to go that smoothly. We want it to, but you know, we're analysts. We have to call it as we see it. I don't see it going as well as you think it's going to go, but I hope it does.
Do the right thing, Dr. Fauci. Lace that pitch right down the center and then dab right after. Coming up next, will Logo Lillard become Disney Dame and lead the Blazers to a playoff run? We preview that next on Golic and Wingo.